from 1 Kings chapter 12. Rehoboam traveled to Shechem, a border city between Ephraim and Manasseh, because the entire community of Israel had gathered there to install him as their new king. Jeroboam, Nebat's son, received word of this while he was living in Egypt, hiding from King Solomon. When the people of the northern tribes called for Jeroboam, and with him the entire community of Israel spoke to Solomon's son, Rehoboam. During your father's time, he weighed us down with heavy workloads and caused us much suffering. We have come here to ask you to lighten the load your father laid upon us. If you do so, we will be your willing servants.
Go away for 3 days. Then come back to me. I need time to think this over.
The people left. King Rehoboam then went to talk with the elders who had been in service with his father, Solomon, when he was alive. He asked for their advice on this matter.
I have pondered for your wisdom. What guidance do you have for me? What should I say to these people who are asking me to lighten their workload?
Sir, your people today do exactly as they ask and offer them kind words and encouragement. If you serve them in this way today, then they will be devoted to you and will serve you forever. But Rehoboam ignored the advice of the elders. Instead, he went to consult his childhood friends, the young men with whom he had grown up and who had served him.
And what guidance do you have for me? What should I say to these people who have made this request to me? Lighten our load, the one your father has placed upon us.
And the young men said, when you meet again with these people who have made this request to you, your father weighed us down with heavy workloads and caused us much suffering. We ask you to lighten the load of your father laid upon us. You need to speak firmly. You think my father was hard on you? My little finger is more potent than my father's loins. My father weighed you down with a heavy load, but I will make your load even heavier. My father used whips to command you, and you thought that was harsh. I will use a scourge with a sting of scorpions. Jeroboam and all the people of Israel came back and met with Rehoboam after they had been away for 3 days. They did this because Rehoboam had given them this instruction, go away for 3 days and then come back to me. So Rehoboam spoke to the people in a tyrannical tone and completely ignored the advice of the experienced elders. Rehoboam instead heeded the advice of the young men with whom he had grown up.
My father weighed you down with a heavy load, but I will make your load even heavier. My father used whips to command you, and you thought that was harsh. I will use the scourge with the sting of scorpions. After King Rehoboam had finished speaking to Jeroboam and the Israelites, the king did not listen to them as his eternal descendants. Thus,
what lot of David's belongs to us? We have no inheritance in Jesse's son. Go back to your tents, Israel. Take care of your own house, David. There is no good news for us. The Israelites left and went back to their homes. But Rehoboam ruled over all the Israelites who lived in the cities that were now part of Judah. In Israel, Jeroboam fortified Shechem in the hilly land of Ephraim. He lived there for a time, then he took on another project and fortified Penuel.
Jeroboam then said, it is possible that the kingdom might return to the house of David. If these people make sacrifices in the eternal temple in Jerusalem, then their hearts will go back to the Lord, even from Rehoboam to this king. They will surely execute me and go back to Rehoboam. The king sought out advice and asked two paths out of those. It's too difficult for you to travel, Jeroboam said, all the way to Jerusalem to make the sacrifice. These are your gods, Israel, who led you out of Egypt. Jeroboam placed one of the golden calves in the temple and
The word of our Lord.
Today's gospel comes from Mark chapter 10, verses 42 through 45. So Jesus called to them and said to them, "You know that among the Gentiles, those whom they recognize as their rulers lord it over them, and their great ones are tyrants over them. But it is not so among you, but whoever wishes to become great among you, he must be your servant. And whoever wishes to be the first among you, he must be the slave of all. For the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many." The Gospel of the Lord.
Morning. Let's talk about power, ego, oppression, machismo, and drama. Lots and lots of drama. No, I'm not talking about the NFL or the NBA or even the WNBA. And no, I'm not talking about the Kardashians or the Blue Bloods or Good Wife or whatever it is that you love to watch on TV, as I do as well. Today, we're face to face with a family drama, a father's legacy and a son's need to win. King Solomon ruled with a mighty fist, but his son, Rehoboam, is bound and determined to show that he is better. Showing off in front of his friends, he spouts off, he makes promises and threats, puffing up his chest and strutting his stuff to prove that he is bigger and better and stronger than his father, King Solomon. Talk about an inferiority complex, right? King Solomon was not a perfect king, but he did something amazing. He united the kingdom, and that was no small feat. After King Solomon died, his son Rehoboam took the reins. And as you heard in the reading, in one of the most foolish decisions of all time, Rehoboam listened to his childhood friends instead of listening to the elders. And he dealt harshly with his people. And he said, "My father was hard on you, but you just wait and see how I will be even harder on you." If Rehoboam had put the needs of the people first, this may never have fallen apart. But Rehoboam was full of pride. And Jeroboam was waiting in the wings for such a moment as this. He was the newcomer on the scene with tons of charisma and promises for change. Does this sound like our political system right now? So after Rehoboam made his fateful speech, the people came to Jeroboam and asked him to be their king. The result was a divided kingdom, a divided people, all in the name of ego and power and oppression. And most of all, in the name of competition. Now, we Americans wouldn't know anything about competition, would we? I mean, it's almost as American as apple pie, am I right? We thrive on it. Just look at the athletics that we follow, the things that keep our young people engaged with competition, right? Well, growing up in a farming community, when I was on the playground, it was a little different than it is here in the suburbs. It was always about who had the most land or the best tractor. And it went like this: "My dad has a new tractor." And the other kid would say, "Yeah, but my dad's tractor is bigger than your dad's tractor." Now that sounds really silly, but at the time, that's what we were bragging about. But now that has been replaced with rhetoric about political affiliation, economic status, race, and religion. And in our consumer-driven society, we need only turn on the TV to see what kind of short-term fixes might be available for acne or baldness. There's always a fix for wrinkles or a new quick weight loss scheme. And this last several years, we've been bombarded on television with pharmaceutical ads that claim amazing results with just a few hair-raising side effects. There's always ways that we can be new and improved, the next best thing. But that plays to our insecurities, and it messes with our pride. Most days, I guess, we can look at this and laugh it off for the silliness that it is. But there are always those days when we are a little bit more vulnerable, when we don't feel like we are quite enough, when those messages tend to settle upon us more heavily, and it changes the way that we see and interact with the world. At its worst, the spirit of competition infiltrates our relationships to the point that it's no longer about connecting, but it's about winning. Winning affection, winning attention, winning recognition. And I'm not just talking about children here. Adults do this all the time because it can be so addictive. A news story caught my eye this week. You may have seen it on the church's Facebook page this week. This story just completely flips competition upside down. In a cross-country race this week in Iowa, Zachary Hoagland, age 17, crossed the finish line and earned the title of district champion, the first in his high school's history. It was then that he saw another runner named Garrett Hinson, who had collapsed. Zach saw him, and no one was going to his aid, and he shouted out to the other runners, "Is anyone going to help him?" And when no one stepped forward to help, Zach went over to him, put his arm around him, and helped him to the finish line, and then let him go so that he could cross the finish line on his own. Zachary Hoagland was then disqualified and stripped of his win for helping Garrett. And despite the outcry from the local community, that decision has been held. Zachary Hoagland was disqualified for helping a fallen opponent. And I can't help but think that this is a modern-day take on the Good Samaritan story. In a competitive culture where winning is everything, Zachary Hoagland went back to help his opponent. And in the process, he lost the race. What Zachary Hoagland, however, gained that day was a legacy. A legacy of kindness, respect, and caring for other runners, even his opponents. And that got me thinking about the reading today from 1 Kings that Pastor Chris and I just read. Each one of us has a legacy that we pass on to the next generation. What will that legacy be? Will the lure of winning at all costs cloud our judgment and veer us away from the path where Jesus calls us? The path that sets aside status and power and money to a higher goal? In and of themselves, status and money and power, really, there's nothing wrong with them, right? They could be gifts from God, but it's all about how we handle it. Athletics have a great potential to produce character and perseverance and healthy competition. I know, I was a two-sport athlete myself. But just like anything else, the church included, there is always that lure, the potential for evil to settle in, to be all about the win at all costs. And there is a cost. The cost may not be realized immediately, but when we focus on the present without regard for the long term, that's when we get into trouble. For King Rehoboam, the cost of his pride was a once united kingdom now became divided, a family legacy shattered. We see what a mess Rehoboam makes of things, trying to outdo his father's reputation. And in so doing, he makes a royal mess of things, placing an even heavier yoke on the people, the laborers who were building the kingdom. And in thinking about this competition theme, I was thinking, perhaps we are in danger of creating God to be in our ideal image. A God who is attractive, successful, well-spoken, who cleans up well, who comes from the right side of town and looks just like us. We're in danger of crafting God in the image of a winner, someone who is strong and confident and epitomizes everything that we desire for ourselves. Well, Jesus came and blew that out of the water. Jesus came and said he was not to be served, but he came to serve. Jesus came and surpassed all these expectations of a powerful king and instead became servant of all. A servant who became arrested, detained, hung on a tree, bloody and broken and vulnerable. In Jesus' life, he embodied that brokenness, and we have all seen some of that, at least in our own lives. It's hard to look at the way Jesus becomes so vulnerable, so broken. It's hard to see our king on a tree like that. And it's even harder to look in the mirror some days and see that same kind of brokenness in our own eyes, and to show the world who we are deep down inside. But without taking a good look at ourselves and the lives that we're building, it's easy for us to get lost. King Rehoboam did not get the point. But the question is, do we? Do we strive to be like King Rehoboam, seeking power and success as the world defines it, when Jesus taught us not to strive for such things? How we live and how we die makes a difference. It matters how we live in the here and now, for us and for the generations to come, for a future that is yet to be determined, for those of us who still, admittedly, seek the golden calf. So today, as we commemorate All Saints Sunday, which is a day of thanksgiving for people who have nurtured us in faith throughout the generations, for those who have died and those who are among us still, those who have encouraged us in our faith and help us to build our own legacy. It's a time to celebrate those people, those lives, and to be molded and grounded together as a people of faith. Where would we be without those people in our lives who have encouraged us, who have guided us, who have taught us what it means to be faithful? One way to honor those people who have nurtured us is to create an ethical will. On the way out of the doors today, you'll receive a template for an ethical will. An ethical will is different than a will or a living will. It's a way to pass along in writing to others the story of your lives, your loves and losses, your values, your faith, all the things that make you who you are today. It's a way to reflect on things that have guided you spiritually, morally, and personally. It's a way to look at the life and the legacy that you're building now to see if this aligns with the person you want to be. And we don't need to wait to do this until we get older. We can do this throughout our lives. By writing this legacy letter, we can become the people that God envisions us to be. So as you receive this on the way out today, you'll receive this ethical will template. There's a lot of questions on there. I'm not assigning homework. Go home, think about it. You may want to journal about it. You may want to consider writing letters to those you love to express some of these things that you may think everyone in your family and friends know, but maybe not. It's a good time to allow God to speak through your life. So together, as we engage in this thoughtful reflection and give pause to the ways that God is working in our lives, we ask God to be part of this, our legacy that we are building. Thanks be to God. Amen.